Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, happy Thursday and welcome to P4P Real Talk. I hope you guys had an excellent week this week, a fantastic Valentine's Day. And you know what's next? This program is sponsored by P4P Muscle, the number one drug-free sponsorship in the world. If you are a drug-free athlete and are looking for a solid foundation to stand on, as well as a vehicle to drive your goals, like what, Kalen?
A Mack truck through ice cream, honey.
Chocolate ice cream. Check us out at p4pmuscle.com. And now let's talk. I am Desiree Fletcher, and he is Kalen Patterson. And together we are P4P Real Talk.
Little
How are
Patterson.
You doing?
Yes,
good,
he is.
Buddy. Good, buddy.
And snickerdoodle ice cream, yes. Chocolate batter, no. No, snickerdoodle.
Shoot. That's all right. It's too early in the show to start picking with him on that now. We'll save that for later in the show. But, hey, Kalen was gracious enough to let me have the night off on Tuesday. I was spending Valentine's with my crew, my kids. And he was on the airwaves with Ed and Andrea Castillo and Josh and, gosh, now I'm going to pull a Kalen. Melissa, yes, there is. Miller, and I hear it was a fantastic show. Fill me in on what happened.
Oh, my goodness. It was a very loving show, and that was the whole point of it. And we were talking about couples and how people could stay together while still competing, still doing prep and basically learning to do things together instead of it being the selfish monikered ideology that it's been given. There's a lot of teamwork that goes into bodybuilding, especially natural bodybuilding. And it just was nice to hear that it could work. And we had a couple of 17 years with Josh and Melissa Miller and 26 years with Ed and Andrea Castillo. So it was really nice to hear that and know that it can work. And they were basically two dynamics, opposite ends of the spectrum. And so, you know, you had a couple that did everything together, and you had another couple that basically did things on their own and how they did it, but they were very supportive no matter what was going on, and they found a way. And that's what I was basically trying to get out to everybody that competes or is supportive of people that compete, is that if you want something bad enough, there is a way to do it. And I just am shocked that so many people can find a way to transform their bodies using their minds, but they can't use their minds to transform their relationships. And I was very grateful to Andrea with how she put it, because she covered basically everything as a promoter, as well as Josh and Melissa as promoters, competitors, and basically just people observing backstage what it takes to encompass all that to make things work in a relationship and still be number one in competition.
And that is so important. And you've said it, we've said it a million one times. Many of our guests have said it, that the support system can make or break you in the sport. So that's awesome that you had all of that going on, all of the love flowing freely on Valentine's Day. And for anyone who might have missed it, you can definitely check us out at the archives. Go to blogtalkradio.com and look for Real Talk, and you'll be able to find the link, download it, and enjoy it over and over and over again, because you can't just listen to one of our shows just once. Well, some of them you could.
Some of them
you might not, or at least one or two you might not want to listen to at all. But that's a story for another time.
Yes.
Yeah, so tonight we have two awesome guests on, and I know I say that every show because all of our guests are awesome, but these guys are very awesome, and I'm going to let Kalen go ahead and set it up for us.
Yes, we have been covering so many things, and I don't know how we missed the men of our beloved military, because, you know, America loves its military, and since we were on such a loving show, I can't believe we didn't address these guys sooner. We have great people in the military. We have great people in the police force, fire department, basically all these good things that are happening in life. And for some reason, we just weren't addressing them, and I can't imagine why not. And I just am just so elated to have these two gentlemen on, and the things that we're going to talk about are going to cover basically their lives as they see it and how we and how we look at things. And I just had to say that right after I got a message from Des, and the timing couldn't have been better. My God, woman. Derek and Truman, Derek first, and then Truman, you introduce yourself, and we'll get the show started. Did we lose Derek?
Derek. Alrighty. Yeah. Hey guys. Derek Davis here. I've been on here a few times, obviously. U.S. Army. Going on 20 years in July. My rank is currently a master sergeant. Get ready to head to the United States Army Sergeant's Major Academy this summer for my last and final rank, and that should be an adventure. I am also
what's going on in there.
Say again.
We hear somebody talking in the background. Is that a TV or something?
Oh, hold on.
You didn't find your
here a little bit. Let me find my Zen page here for a minute. All right, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah. I guess my mic picks up pretty good. So more my headphones anyway. All right, cool. Did you hear that first part?
Yes.
Yeah, we heard everything. We were just hearing everything else.
Okay. All right, yeah, so like I said, headed to the academy this summer. At least that's the plan right now. Just still waiting on the final orders to come down. I'm also I'm also a natural bodybuilder. I wouldn't say I claim affiliation, but I am predominantly in the DFAC, Trophy Athletes Coalition, which I've kind of made my home for the past few years here. Other than that, I mean, that's just a short synopsis of who I am. I mean, if anything else pops up, I'll go from there.
There you go. True.
All right. So my name is True Ward.
Listen to that voice. Added. So militaristic.
Yeah, that's the command voice. Or
yeah, I wanted
to
be 20 already.
Yeah. Well, I'm at what am I at? I'm at 23 now, going on 24.
Wow.
I am in the Army. Yeah, I'm old. I'm that old crusty chief. Derek knows what
Hey,
I'm
hold on, hold on. Son, please. This is from Samuel, and he says he's old. He's the superhero version of Black in America.
Wow.
Yeah. All right. Okay, fair enough. I was enlisted. I was an NCO like my man Derek is now. I made it to E7, and then I crossed over to warrant officer, and I've been a warrant officer for about 7 years now.
Maverick.
Yeah. So let's see, I got I'm a CW3, so I'm a Chief Warrant Officer 3. For anyone that's not familiar with warrant officer ranks, it goes to CW5, that's a Master Chief Warrant Officer 5. I don't know if I'll stay in that long, but I am definitely going for CW4. So that's the Army side of the house. Then the competitive side of the house, been competing, I want to say since 2010 or 11. I went pro in 2013. I am the current and reigning world sports model champion for PNBA. That's my primary agency that I compete out of. For 2014, 15, and 16, and I plan on making it 17 too.
All right. And I'll start off with, my goodness, we're getting questions already. So Okay, both you guys. Oh, wow, this is a pretty good question. We have a guy that did 2 years in, and he unfortunately got to see some EOD compatriots, and they were all about the gear. How do you guys manage to stay natural and still stay competitive in the basically your fields as well as in bodybuilding? We'll start with Derek.
I mean, for me, it's my choice. You'll see, you know, people throughout, you know, in the industry or wherever, you know, that obviously, you know, use gear. But for me, it's just something that I've never been attracted to as far as, you know, specifically that. I just like doing things, you know, I would say the old-fashioned way, you know, as natural as possible. And letting my work speak for itself, you know. I'm not trying to be like anyone else, because the thing in the industry is that everyone is trying to be like somebody else, and that's, for the most part, is impossible. You're not going to be like Arnold. You're not going to be like all the guys that you see on TV or whatever the case will be on the internet. You can only be whoever you are. So I can only be Derek Davis, bottom line. I can't be anyone else that's on this planet, because, you know, God made me who I am. You know, there's only one Derek Davis, you know, of this DNA on the planet. So that's how I kind of look at things, and I relate that to what I do. And as you know, we have a lot of values and things that we, you know, uphold in the military, and I want to try to uphold those the best that I can. Not perfect, but I'm going to try to stay close to those as I can.
Yeah, wow. Love it. I love it.
Go ahead, Drew.
Okay, so the gear, in other words, steroids, right, anabolic. So one of my takes is, first I'll say current. So the current, I don't want to say society, but I'll say that we have instant access to everything. You want to watch a movie? Back in the day, it was Blockbuster. Now it's streaming. You need some information, you Google it. Seconds later, you have it in your iPhone. You want to order something, 2 seconds, you get it on Amazon. Same with bodybuilding for a lot of people. They're in the gym. They see someone on a magazine, whether it's Muscle or Fitness, Men's Health, internet gurus, and they say, my God, that person is amazing, girl or guy. My Lord, that person has got the most God-given physique. How can I look like that? I want to look like that now, not in 10 years, not in 15 years, today. If I can look like that this afternoon, what do I need to take? And I'm not interested in hearing that it's going to take time and years and diet. The problem is, like my man Derek said, especially for my younger crowd that's listening tonight, and then my older crowd that's more my age group, 40s, 40-ish, 50-ish. The problem is that some of those people that you're seeing on the internet, some of those people that you're seeing in the magazines, some of those people that you're seeing on stage are for sure not natural. Now, that's their prerogative. The thing that draws me to natural bodybuilding, and I've been natural my entire life, is that if you see someone like me or someone like Derek on the cover of a magazine, we can get just as lean, just as big, and just as shredded as 90% of those competitors, but we're obtainable. So that 19-year-old kid, he sees me, he can be me in 20 years. That 40-year-old individual, he sees me or Derek. Yeah, it might take him a little while on the treadmill. He might have to diet extra hard. He might have to go a couple of extra hours in the gym. But we're obtainable. And then lastly, I, Derek, other natural competitors like us, we're going to look like this for a very long time. I'm 40 years old. Actually, I'm 43. I've been working out since I'm 19. I will look like this well into my 50s and 60s. Now, I challenge anybody right now to give me top 10 world-level athletes, I'm talking bodybuilders, that have been competing for the last 20 years, and you tell me if they still look the way they did when they were on top of their game. I'm not going to point out any names, but I've been bodybuilding, and I've been working out for 20 years. You tell me another 10 bodybuilders that have been working and lifting for over 20 years that still look like they can step on stage tomorrow.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Very good point. And it's good to have both of you reiterate those points, because I think a lot of times those messages come out and people just kind of like, yeah, 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 these guys are the exception to the rule, and that's not really how it works, and, you know, whatever excuse they want to have not to accept the natural message. But, you know, it does work that way, and you just hear it time and time again, and hopefully at some point it's really going to start to sink in. And our listeners are on the ball tonight because they've already submitted several questions. We've got one here from Laura, and this is for both of you. Again, she wants to know if you are married, and if you are, how are you maintaining those relationships? Derek, we'll start with you again.
All righty. Yes, I am married. I'll say it's been a journey. I'll say it like that, because it was, for me, like, you know, just like Truman, you know, working out or athletic, you know, my whole life. And I've only been in this sport specifically around 3 to 4 years, you know, give or take there. And so it was a lifestyle change. Obviously, it was a, you know, complete, you know, change for me. It was, you know, complete change for my household as well. But it took some time to kind of get used to, you know, me being in the gym all the time, me being on, you know, specific diets, whatever the case. Oh, I can't, you know, I don't feel like going here, or I can't eat this, or, you know, it's an adjustment. It is a huge adjustment, you know, during the first, you know, year or so there. But over time, you know, things became, you know, normal. And, you know, you just, it's who I am now. You know, it's my passion. Besides being a soldier, bodybuilding is my second passion. You know, it does take time, and it is an adjustment. And what you want to try to do is, you know, incorporate that into your home, you know, with your wife or your spouse or with your kids as well. And maybe they'll like it or they won't, but, you know, you can at least, it can be something that you can share together over time.
True.
I started bodybuilding. I was dating my wife, Loretta, at the time that I started, 2010. And she's been to every show. Her and my daughter have been to every single show that I've been in. She was in the gym. She was active, but she was not a competitor. And then she went to my first show. And I'm getting to a point here. So she's helping me backstage, and she's looking at a lot of the female competitors that are getting ready. And it was bikini competitors and a bunch of figure competitors, and I think maybe one or two bodybuilder females. And I'm not going to say she's talking crap about them, because my wife is, bless her heart, she does not talk crap about anybody. But she was definitely, she was kind of making comments like, man, she competes. Well, some of those people, right, that she was pointing out, I was around a lot, because I was working out with them all the time. I was working out next to them, and I'd seen them diet, and I'd seen them do cardio, and I'd see them struggle. And so I was a little bit, I guess I was getting a little bit offensive, and I said, well, you know what, Loretta, if it's that easy, why don't you get on stage then? Since, you know, you can clearly point out who should be competing or who shouldn't. And she said, you know what, you're right. I'm sorry, I apologize. 2 months later, she got in her first show, wins her class, and then wins overall. Yeah, kicked everybody's tail. And she said, okay, so there's that. Then from there, when you start winning, you start getting addicted. And so then we became, and till this day, are a competing couple. The caller that asked if we're married, how do we do it? This is a selfish, selfish sport. It really is. It is such a blessing to be able to have a partner that competes with you, that diets with you. Me and Loretta work out together every day. We're in the gym every day. Then we come home, we prep meals together, and then we suffer together. We don't have sugar together. We do not get to enjoy ice cream together. We damn sure don't get to go and have popcorn when we're watching some cartoon movie with our daughter together. And then we get to come back home and be real, real hungry just before we go to sleep together. So then we're miserable together. So when I say this sport is very selfish, misery loves company. I love it when my wife is miserable right next to me. Then we get on stage. And that whole process, the signing in, the having to travel from one time zone to another, having to book and pay for a bunch of stuff, and then eat out of suitcases and bags, and then the day show, and then the night show, and then you both win. I cannot explain to you guys what a religious feeling that is to have you and your wife at the same time experience that. You both have first place trophies when you get to go back out that night and have your cheat meal. Well, for me, 7 cheat meals and then her just a regular cheat meal. It's beautiful. It really is.
It's awesome. In its own little way. That's all I can say. And guys, I do have to tell you, once you both came on and said that you were married, we got a lot of frowny faces coming in on the comments. So there's some ladies out there, I think, that were hopeful that you were single, but alas, that's not the case. But it does tie into our next question. So we have from Shakia, and I hope I pronounced that right. I apologize if I did not. But she wants to know if women hit on you regularly, and if it happens, when it happens, how do you go about dealing with it and being respectful to the woman that you're dealing with at the same time being respectful to your wives? True, why don't we start with you first this time?
So I'm usually 3 places at any given time. Work, gym, home. My wife is anywhere between 2 to 7 feet from me at every time of all 3 of those places. My wife is 5'11". Off season, you know, she's about 155 pounds of muscle, and she's never far behind me. So the whole me getting hit on is pretty nil at best. Yeah, I can't even think of a time. And then we usually have, since my wife is a trainer, she has a lot of female clients. So there's so at any given time, I'll have maybe, instead of getting hit on, I'll have a lot of girls that'll. So if I'm doing cable tricep pull down, and I look over, and there's a girl that's been staring at me for maybe a couple minutes. I'm pretty sure she's staring at me, and then I go and I start doing maybe some skull crunchers, and I look up, girl's still staring at me, and then eventually the girl comes over. I take my earphones out, and the girl says, "Hey, excuse me, I don't mean to bother you, but is that your wife that I see you with every day? Because she is gorgeous, and I would love to look like her, and I'm intimidated to even approach her, so I'm going to approach you. And does she train? And can you give her my name? Oh, my gosh, I can't even look at her. She's just so beautiful." And I'm thinking, I'm 6'3", 235 pounds, tattooed, muscle dude, and you didn't have no problems coming up and telling me that my wife intimidates you? Okay.
Derek, how about you?
Well, it has happened before. I just, you know, just shrug it off for the most part. Try not to get too, you know, caught up. Just try to focus on what I'm, you know, doing in the gym or you know, out and about. You know, just try to keep it as casual as possible. You know, if the conversation starts to get a certain way, then I'll, you know, deflect or turn it in a different direction to avoid that area. I mean, this is, you know, this sport is, like you said, it's a selfish sport, but at the same time, it is appealing, you know, in many ways. So you definitely have to be careful, you know, with the interactions that you have out there, you know, in the industry and outside the industry, for the most part.
I'll take the next one because this is something I saw when I was in the military, and you know, initially that question, I'm piggybacking what Dez asked you, because the military is a struggle in itself, you know, with the separation of husband and wife from time to time, and some of the different fields, and then you have basically, like Derek was saying, the appeal factor of you basically having a top form in physique, and you know, let's be honest, that, you know, you hear about that man in uniform, and oh my goodness, you know, so it's tough, and I've seen a lot of people falter, but I've also been blessed to see the good men, you know, not just in the field, not just in their prospective categories. Or what they're training to be, but actually good men, heart and soul. And, you know, thankfully they tie in hand with being a natural athlete, if that makes sense. You know, the ones that were basically being the dogs or the ones that were basically willing to take the risks were also doing it with their health as well. So, you know, I really respect what you guys are. And I really enjoy the fact that you have grabbed hold of a natural life. And if you could just talk about that. So, you know, the guys that are, because we have people joining the military every single day, and they're going to be shipped off into some really horrific situations, and they still have to maintain so much, because where I'm going is like, you get to a destructive life, and suicide rate in the military is incredible. And I was just shocked when I learned that. And it's a lot of bad choices that basically start piling on until they basically have nowhere to go. With you guys' ranks and time and service, I'm sure you can speak on that and address it in a way that's more productive than taking your own life. So, Derek, we'll start with you on this one, and True will let you follow it up.
All right. Yes, suicide definitely is one of the more touchier subjects, you know, in our military, you know, today, or in society, really, but it's definitely in the military. It is something that I have dealt with on many occasions directly, being a leader, you know, within the Army. And there's never an easy way to deal with it. The thing that I've always tried to do as a leader is to try to sit down with the soldier one-on-one and talk to the soldier, try to understand where the soldier is coming from and offer that help, advice in any way that I can. And even then, and I'll tell you this, and I'm telling you, you know, straight from experience, even then, it's still not enough at the end of the day.
Yes.
It's still not enough. But it is, you know, and that's, for the most part, coming from my perspective, coming from what Master Sergeant Davis does when he, you know, deals with a situation like that. You know, like I said, just sit down and talk with the soldier, send him to the different agencies that we have. We have tons and tons of resources in our Army now than we did 20 years ago. And I'm quite sure Drew can attest to that. We have way more resources than we've ever had. We pour money into these agencies and people to actually help, you know, those individuals that are in need. It's not only the leader's responsibility, but it's every single soldier that serves, a serviceman, let me say it in that perspective, that serves, if you, you know, see someone struggling, you're obligated to reach out and help your fellow service member, you know, so no matter what their rank is, because it happens at all ranks is irrelevant to the matter, and, you know, but it's a duty to reach out and help that individual as best you can. So it's a very tough subject. It's something that, like I say, we deal with on a regular. I get reports every single day, you know, with suicidal ideations, et cetera. And I personally, like I said, I was short story, but I was stationed in Hawaii a few years ago, and I had an individual that attempted suicide. It was actually attempted suicide. And the individual had missed formation that morning. And me being the leader that I am, my soldiers know automatically, hey, if you fail to report to the first formation of the day, which is every soldier in the United States has to report to some type of formation or report to someone on every single day that you wake up, if you're not there, if you're not accounted for, then we need to find you, okay? So first, we're going to start with the phone. We're going to call you. If you can't get you on the phone, guess what? We're going to go to your place of residence. And, you know, so knock on your door, whatever the case may be. Just so happened that morning, that soldier had literally planned to take his life. Literally. And he had it all planned out, literally in his house, note written and everything. And the soldiers that I had under me at the time, the great NCOs that I had under me, they saved his life, literally. They literally saved his life during that particular time frame. And,
wow.
You know, it's instances wow. like that. If I didn't care about a soldier, but a person, then guess what? We wouldn't be having this conversation right now. And I may not have, I probably would have been, who knows, fired and retired or out of the way by now, you know, for lack of, you know, leadership overall. So it's a lot of things that encompasses these overall, especially in the military aspect. It's a lot of moving parts. And it takes when I say a team effort, it takes a team effort because I, not Sergeant Davis, cannot be with every single soldier in my company or in any formation every single day, 24 hours of the day. I can't. It's impossible. So I need everybody to do that part. Even the individuals themselves, they have to take responsibility for it as well. Okay, and letting someone know, hey, I need help. And when that person cries out for that help, the person that receives that information is obligated to get that person that help, regardless of rank. That's my take on it.
Drew?
So where I'm, you know, I've been deployed a few times. I've had soldiers and leaders that have attempted or they were successful at committing suicide. And the Army now, that's a really big area for us. Like Master Sergeant Davis said, when I was a private, you know, in the 90s, it was more where you got hazed or even bullied if...
Yes.
You,
yes.
Right. So if there was... If you had some type of issue that was going on, especially in certain MOSs or certain jobs in the military, then the leader's way of fixing you was to tell you, hey, fix yourself, pull your bootstraps up and you know, get over it.
Yes.
You know, now at so you know 2017, you still have leaders at my level, at Derek level, that they're going through something, or they went through something, or they're currently going through something, and they have absolutely no end in sight to the misery. The only way they know how to end it is just to end their life. Now, add to that just in the military aspect, the last 10 years, we have been in some form of conflict. We've been overseas, and we've been in other people's neighborhoods, and we have seen things and dealt with things that most civilians, thank God, never will have to do. They will never have to pull somebody out of a Humvee, and they'll never have to look at that person and tell that person, a lie because they don't have the courage to tell them that their legs are still in the Humvee burning. Now, add on to things like alcohol. A lot of us have depression and depression issues that are just now starting to be articulated, whereas before, or you have something wrong with you, self-medicate, alcohol, drugs.
Didn't talk about it.
Then, let's add a third fact, which it happens in the military a lot, steroids. Steroids, along with, you know, drugs and alcohol, steroids specifically, they take your actual DNA makeup, your code, and they change it. For you are a different person, literally, after you have, for an extended amount of time, used steroids. It takes your DNA code and it changes it into something else. So now you've increased your testosterone production. You've increased your muscle production. But you've also altered things like your liver, your heart, your brain. And if you are dealing with things already at a normal mental state, now add on the alcohol or some of those agents that just take you to a place where you say, you know what, the best way I know how to solve this is to kill myself. So when you have leaders, me, Derek, and other leaders that you can get trained, you can go to school, you can take these courses every so couple of months or weeks, but it's never going to be enough if we're not identifying the things that are helping somebody feel like the best way that they can end the suffering is to kill themselves. And then that, unfortunately, with a lot of the issues and a lot of the deployments that we've had in the last couple of years, a lot of the soldiers have dealt with now is an increase with alcohol, is an increase with drugs, it's an increase with mental illness now. It's increased with depression now. And a lot of us, we don't actually know how to fix ourselves. So then it's the next person's responsibility, like Master Sergeant Davis or a Chief Ward, to look that person in the eye and say, you're my battle buddy. Just by the virtue that you have that uniform on, I will lay my life down for you. And by laying my life down for you, that can mean either physically or I'm going to grab you up and I'm going to say, hey, that you're hurting. Me and you need to go talk to somebody. Because if you end your life, there is plenty of people after you that are going to be destroyed. Your suffering ends, but what about your mom? What about your wife? What about your two daughters at home? What about your son? What about your friends? What about your relatives? And that's the thing that me and leaders like Master Sergeant Derek are trying to curtail in the Army.
And it makes a big difference. And I'm just gonna piggyback that because, like you guys are saying, this stuff filters down. And the sad thing about suicide is if somebody's looking up to you and you happen to take your own life, then they get the depression because you were their role model and you didn't see a reason to live. And, you know, I was just talking about it on social media where we had, you know, for Valentine's Day in my area, we had six people that took their own lives. And a lot of them had been out with friends, you know, hanging out, doing whatever, but they're just so depressed because of, you know, the atmosphere in this nation, the way things are being spoken, like it's almost like people are saying there's no hope. And to a mind that's already mentally damaged, that's a tough spot to be. And if someone's already broken, it's not hard to break them any further because, you know, they're not really doing much to recover anyway. And like Drew was saying, with the addition of drugs and alcohol, it enhances it. I mean, it's called an enhancer for a reason. And these things basically take you out. And, you know, the thing about the military is that you will see some things that are just not normal. Death is not normal. It's a natural thing, but the way we see it, it's not natural and it's not normal. So that's something the mind has to really process, and it doesn't happen overnight, and you don't shut it off when you go to sleep. So there's a lot of things that are entailed in that. And, you know, for anybody that's listening, please reconsider. I would say that. Please really understand, like True said, look at the people that you don't think matter right now because your hurt and suffering is happening, that you sometimes forget about the other people that are involved in your life. So just bear that in mind, and then I'll pass it to Dez, or if you guys have anything else you'd like to add to that.
I think you said it.
And
all
you
right.
know, I think he did. And you know, this is a topic in and of itself that could be its own show. I mean, it's really hard to transition from one thought to the next when you've covered something that is so serious and yet becoming so commonplace, and there are just so many nuances to it. but one thought
well, you know,
that you know, did, oh, go ahead.
Let's ask the guys. Now, because, I think it would be wrong to transition. I think you got a very valid point on that, because this is something that we're getting a lot of questions about. And would you guys mind coming on for another show later down the road?
Absolutely.
Sure thing.
Okay, well, then we'll go with this one. We have Sam, and he just lost his aunt. She was in the Air Force. And she took her own life because she just couldn't make it back home. But the family is still suffering. This has been a year and a half, and we still miss her dearly. Thank you guys for bringing this topic. And how do you console the family members when you have to personally go and address that?
Can I jump on this one real quick? Yeah. So there's a thing in the Army. It's called CNO. CNO. It's called Casualty Assistance Officer or Casualty Notification Officer. It's usually the rank of. I could be wrong, but it's from E7 and above to an officer. If a family member, and so every person that's a CNO or CNO, it's an extra duty when you have a family member die, whether overseas or suicide, or however the cause is, we're the guys and girls that show up at the doorstep, you know, in our dress uniform. And we ring the doorbell, and someone answers, and as soon as they see us, you know, and I've had to do that. That is absolutely 100% the hardest job that I've ever – I hate that job. I hate it with a passion. Hate it. In fact, I am on CNO duty this month as we speak, and I have – thankfully, this is the shortest month. I'm done as soon as March 1st is concerned, and I'm praying, of course, that I don't have to go to somebody's doorstep and tell them. Now, the point of how do you console them? So when me and Derek were privates, you would hear, you are a soldier 24/7, and you get brainwashed into thinking that, and then after a while, oh, I'm a soldier, which you are literally on duty 24/7. That's kind of how we work. But the whole you're a soldier 24/7, to me now, I say no. I'm a man first 24/7. I'm a man, and so is Derek, and so is every other service member that puts this uniform on. The man is what operates this uniform. The man is what gets up and helps my daughter with her homework and then gets her stuff ready for school and then goes to work. Not the uniform. I'm not a robot. So when I have to look somebody in the face and tell them that their son or their daughter or their husband their mom is not coming home, the first thing is you think of how it would feel if you were being told that, and it's terrible. It's a horrible, horrible experience. But the second part is, it's my duty, so I make sure that I console them as best as I can as a human being first, even though it's the warrant officer or the master sergeant or the first sergeant or the captain that's telling them. I make sure it's the human being first that's letting them know.
Amen.
That their baby isn't coming home.
And true hit it, I mean, you couldn't have said it any better. I mean, we're humans first. Before anything, before any position, we are people. Okay, so inherently we have a level of compassion in us. Even the meanest people have a level of compassion somewhere hidden in the layers at the end of the day. And it's no easy way to, like you say, go, you know, to those families and to those loved ones and offer your condolences overall. I mean, I've been on, you know, CNO duty before. I've escorted soldiers to their final destination. And it's a tough job. That is, like Drew said, that's one of the toughest jobs that I've ever had to do as well. I actually volunteered to escort a service member's to his family, his family location, for services, and it was hard. It's hard to look at that family that's, you know, that's grieving and struggling and going through, you know, what they're going through, and it really hits home that hey, on someday, one day, that's going to be me, because we're all going to inspire from this earth, and especially us being veterans. We're gonna go through that same. Somebody's gonna go through that same process for us, you know. And it really brings it home. But there's no easy way to console those family members. The only thing you have to show that level of compassion is show that you care. I keep going back to that word care, because everything that we do in life comes down to a level of care. How much do you care about whatever the situation is in front of you? You know, whether in your home, outside of your home, your fellow man, sister, brother, whatever the case, how much do you care? You know, and you know, when people see that, hey, you care, and it kind of relaxes them a little bit, and now they can kind of ease, you can kind of ease in a little bit more and help them with whatever situation that may be going on, you know.
And I think you guys, you really did hit that on the head. You know, we've had more listeners. In fact, another one, Jake, who has seen his cousin and his uncle take their lives, and he was just expressing how he never has the words to try to make a difference to his family. And I think your advice of leading with compassion first is, you know, in demonstrating that you care is sometimes the loudest message that you can give. Because there really aren't words. There are so many feelings and emotions wrapped up into all of this. You just can't express, you know, what is that magic sentiment that's going to make someone feel better. And a lot of times it's not the words, it's the actions. And the other part of this that really struck me is, you know, as military officers and as bodybuilders, when people look at you, they always see you coming from a position of strength. The uniform makes you strong. Your training makes you strong, whether that's, you know, military training or you're in the gym and you have the muscle mass to support that you're strong. But it's really not any of those things. It's the fact that you said that you are humans, that you do feel, that you do care, that you can have compassion. And it's in those characteristics that make you the strongest in either capacity, whether as an officer or a bodybuilder. And I guess I would just be interested in, you know, what sentiments you would have for anyone who's listening on what truly, in your opinion, you know, demonstrates a strong character or a position of strength. If someone were to aspire to be like, hey, when someone looks at me, I want them to feel like I am strong. What is it that makes you a strong person? And whoever wants to go first.
Ooh. I'll pass this one to you, D.
You gotta do that. What makes me a strong person? I'm pretty. In the military, we have specifically in the Army. I'm not certain if it's military wide. We use the word resilience a lot, and I would say I'm pretty resilient when it comes to a lot of different things. I think it doesn't start when you, in my opinion, it doesn't start when you join the military. I think it begins, from an early age, from home, from your surroundings, from your upbringing, and however the environment that you're around or that you're raised in, and up through school and et cetera, you've learned what you've learned. You've become who you've become up until that point. When you raise your right hand and recite that oath to protect and defend, you become a different person at that particular time. However, now the military is going to teach you, hey, do this, do that, be here, be, wear this, whatever the case may be. So now that's, you're adding all of those things. You're adding a different level of discipline, which is the foundation of everything for me, to your life. So now you take what you've learned, your values and things, how you were raised, and now you have to add this military stuff in. And now you have to, it's in a bucket or something, and now it's all mixed up together. So now you got to figure out how to maintain that balance. What's important here? Yes, I have a mission to do. I'm a soldier. I have obligations, but I'm also, also have values. This way I was raised, this way that I need to treat people, et cetera. And it's a really tough thing to do, especially in the younger years being in the military, because if a person is not used to, Sergeant Davis coming to his face and yelling and screaming, that's a significant emotional event for that individual. I can tell you that straight up. But once you learn more, like, hey, this is a method to the madness, and I'm not saying it is. I'm not saying that I condone that, because there's a way to reach each and every person out there. But once you grow in the military, once you grow as a person, you continue to mature over time, and you become to realize that, hey, I can do things a little different than I did, when I was, 20 years old. Now, 40, whatever the case, I should maybe use a more subtle approach. And in today's society, we're dealing with a different generation. I'll take me and Chief. We're dealing with a different generation of soldiers. Just like when we joined, our predecessors were dealing with a different generation. So we have to adapt, over time to, who we become, as men, as people, as soldiers, et cetera. And I think that's we gather that strength through a combination of things, not just one thing. It's a combination of things that make us who we are, that really shows our strength and our display.
Wow, that's going to be hard to follow up behind, Mass Arnt. Thanks.
Sorry, man.
Yeah, you sound sorry. Let's take it in this spin. So every time a magazine or maybe a post or an article comes out, or a newspaper, and it's got me on there, either the picture of me competing or on stage, or I'm in an article, and that particular magazine or newspaper has its own Facebook page, and then you read the comments. It is, with today's society where you have a lot of keyboard warriors, I'm pretty sure you all know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
So there will be, out of every one positive comment, there's like 10 really negative ones, and they're everything from, if I was a warrant officer, I'd be able to just work out all day and not have to go to work. Well, I tell you what, he's claiming that he's all natural, but I know for a fact that he's not natural, and there's no way he could be that size and have that conditioning. And if I ever see him, I'm going to slap the hell out of him. All right. So then here's where the strength part comes into play. Because I click on that particular person's profile, right? And it's some E3 in the Army, which is like 10,000 ranks below mine. And the dude is like 145 pounds, and he's 19 years old. All right. So let's go with some facts. I'm 43 years old. I have been working out since I'm 19. And I am a natural competitor. So I offered to that guy to say, where were you at when I was up at 4 o'clock in the morning and doing cardio? And then at work at 5:30. And where were you at when I was outside for a smooth 12 hours in this hot Virginia unforgiving summer heat teaching other soldiers to go to some place to protect your silly tail from people that want to come over here to have you not be able to exercise your right of free speech when you just called me a liar? And then where were you, guy, later on that day when I'm doing 7 sets of squats and then a drop set at 225 for 35 reps? And then where were you later that night when I'm still doing cardio? And then where were you that night when I'm eating exactly 10 almonds, 40 grams of carbs, and 35 grams of protein? You were nowhere to be found.
Yes.
But the strength part is, instead of replying to that, I just simply laugh and say, I know exactly what I'm done. I'm not going to entertain this particular individual in his hate and his keyboard warrior. I'm strong enough to know that I'm going to have to get up at 4 because my job in the Army says I have to. And I'm strong enough to go perform my job, and then I'm strong enough to come to the gym later, kill it, and then I'm strong enough to come home and help my daughter with her homework, help my wife prep meals, help my wife with maybe her, well, my wife is a lot smarter than her, me, so she's actually helping me with my homework, and then help clean the house, help organize bills because they don't pay themselves, and then start that process all over again for 8 or 9 months until I get on stage for maybe 7 minutes in hopes of a first place trophy. That, to me, is a good example of strong.
There you go. And I'll just piggyback that with you two gentlemen by saying there's two ways to incorporate strength, and they probably don't make sense to people that are young-minded. And I do say young-minded and not young men, because I know some young fellas that are, and women that are just very beyond their years in thinking. So there's strength and maturity, and there's strength. And when you have a way of directing and dealing with both, you can deal with things a lot more humble, a lot more responsible, and a lot more with thinking down the road, other than like what Drew was saying, where you something to basically please the here and now, but basically hurt yourself down the road. And it's just not worth it when you use that mature mind and the responsible mind, and especially the military mind that says, you know, so I'll pass it to Dez, and she'll take us home.
And, gentlemen, I can't thank you enough for being on the show. Sadly, we are out of time, but I do look forward to the time where we can have you back and just dig a little deeper into several topics that I know we didn't get to tonight. So, Derek,
fit
I know
shaming.
You've had surgery
fit
recently.
Shaming. We want to do fit shaming the next time.
Okay,
yes.
We will do fit shaming the next time. Right. We will get the guys' version. We were going to have ladies' room pick back up on that in another week or so, but we will do that. That's on the talk. That's on the list. So real quick, Derek,
awesome.
I know you had surgery. I hope you've been having a speedy recovery. True, we're going to be watching you for that four-peat. Just keep being awesome, guys, and we're going to have you back as soon as we can.
Yes, ma'am. I'm glad you got to be here.
Thank All
you.
Right. And with that being said, Kaylin, I think you have time quickly for your snickerdoodle shout-out.
Snickerdoodle and snickerfoodle.
So on behalf of myself, Derek Davis, Truman Ward, Kalen Patterson, and the boys at P4P Muscle, your body is a temple, so let's build it.
Three men and a lady.
I like it.
Awesome, awesome, awesome.